Item ten, Ken Smith, Oyster Planting Ground application.
This is an application from Ken Smith. It's actually two applications. What I'd like to do is brief the commission kind of jointly. They're kind of interrelated, but I believe because of our recommendations at the end and depending on what action you wish to take, you may want to take, you may want to take a separate vote on each application. Having said that, Ken Smith has requested in two separate applications authorization to lease approximately 75 acres and 100 acres respectively within the Chesapeake Bay near the mouth of Barnes Creek in Northumberland County. Both applications are protested by numerous residents in the area. We did receive this application on September 17th of 2012, and in application 2012-118, Mr. Smith requested authorization to lease approximately 75 acres of ground, and in 2012-119, a request to lease 100 acres. He included a standard required oyster lease use plan questionnaire for each application, which at that time indicated he was seeking to use both areas for traditional shelling of the bottom and placement of structures on the bottom not to exceed 12 inches in height from the substrate, which is allowed on a lease per our regulation. There are other leases in Barnes Creek and in the general area. I will note that application 2012-118 requested by Mr. Smith was also subject of a previous application by Bluff Point Holdings, LLC, in which they had requested to lease up to 250 acres within Barnes Creek and out the mouth of Barnes Creek. The commission did act on that request in August of last year, as most of y'all will recall, and the commission did approve a reduced area of 150 acres. But this application, Ken Smith's, includes that some of that same area that the commission determined not to lease, the Bluff Point. Now, that was, I'll caveat that by saying Bluff Point agreed to a reduced area after the commission indicated some concerns with the large size of the application. We did did a Bill Pruitt in the library and worked out a compromise, which we brought back.
Remember it well.
That reduction, as I said, was based on some of the protestants' concerns as well as some of staff's concerns related to the nature of the bottom and the fetch in the area. Application 2012-119 is immediately south of the Bluff Point application and immediately south of an area that was leased by the commission at the very mouth and out into the bay at Barnes Creek. Similar issues were raised during the Bluff Point hearing, as are being raised for both of these applications by the protestants. We did do our standard public interest review. The notices were posted in November, and the ad ran once a week for 4 weeks, beginning on October 31st of last year in the Northumberland Echo. So this is kind of a chart with the existing leases shown, including the now assigned Bluff Point lease. This is the area that was part of the Bluff Point application that is now the application for 75 acres, and then this is the area south of the Bluff Point lease that's really more out in the bay for 100 acres. For a little closer view, again, with this is a topographic map, again with the Bluff Point lease and the two areas delineated. This is a chart that gives the depths, and I'm going to leave that up for a moment while I continue with the evaluation. We did receive individual letters of objection from a number of residents to include Ida Hill, Peter and Barbara Kanakis, Carl Gruhl, David Mower, and Harold and Judy Burnley, as well as Frederick and Jane Stillmar. Several of those objecting to the application indicated that they are residents along Barnes Creek. Their objections and concerns include the large size of the lease, possible navigational impacts if on-bottom cages are used in either one of these areas, other recreational uses of the area, the fact that the areas that, at least one of the areas was subject to a previous application request and that the commission had already taken action not to lease that area. I also had a in-house meeting earlier this month with Ms. Hall and Mr. Kanakis, at which time they indicated they continued to object to both applications. Mr. Smith did provide us with some additional information on his intended uses of both areas in an email dated May 19th of this year. In that initial email, he indicated that one of the application areas may be needed, may indeed not be suitable for oyster production, while the other parcel would be suitable for such use. He went on to state that while one parcel may not be suitable for oyster production, he believed it would support experimental uses to catch oyster spat, perhaps using a variety of materials to catch such spat strike. And that email is in your packet. However, after reviewing that email, staff felt that it didn't provide enough information and it didn't specify which lease was which that he was talking about wouldn't be conducive to oyster production, and which one would be the preferred one for this experimental use. We wrote back and requested some additional information. On May 22nd, we got another email from Mr. Smith that did provide some additional information. In this email, he modified his previous statement that one parcel may not be suitable for oyster production and said that actually some of it may actually be suitable. And now we are talking about the northernmost application, 118, which is for 75 acres. He went on to state that some of that area he believed might be useful for oyster production and that the other parts of it might be useful for this experimental use. He further noted that his plan would be to use the shallower areas of this parcel to do the spat strike experimentation, and then that if that was successful, the plan would be to move low-profile cages, which he suggested might be one method used to do the spat strike, to deeper areas in that same application area for grow-out. He then further stated that the larger southern lease, which is the 100-acre application parcel, he believed would support cage aquaculture and his belief that it could eventually be used for traditional bottom shelling for natural oyster spat strike. He also mentioned in his email references to other more non-conventional methods that he is working on with James Madison University, but did not specify those methods. Perhaps he can clarify that today. I will note that in his emails that he indicated not only using low-profile cages, but in his spat experimentation, he mentioned other types of material, indicating that he believed that this was an area for good natural spat strike, and that there was anecdotal evidence from the area that they were striking on pilings, tree stumps, concrete rubble, which raised some concern for us that just getting an oyster ground lease, he could do low-profile cages, but uses of some of these other type materials mentioned in his email were probably not contemplated by the on-bottom cage regulation and might require joint permit application, which wouldn't require a lease necessarily. It would just stand on its merits as encroachment over state-owned bottom. That said, we do note that both of these areas are quite exposed to wind and wave action due to a nearly unlimited fetch to the east and south, which we question whether it would make on-bottom aquaculture successful at either location. And while we admit that the agency is always interested in new and innovative ways to increase shellfish production, we do have serious questions on whether this dynamic location is a proper site for experimental uses. Additionally, the use of the types of material other than low-profile cages, as I noted, may be better handled through a joint permit application. The area of application 2012-118, again, as I noted earlier, is the same area that was part of the Bluff Point application. Staff has considerable concerns about recommending approval of that area when the commission previously denied leasing that area based on similar protests and similar issues with fetch and wind action. The 100-acre application also would appear to present considerable challenges for on-bottom aquaculture due to its exposure and due to the nearly unlimited fetch at this location. And we also have some concerns about traditional shelling of this area for the same reasons and the fact that there is a lot of dynamic sand movement in this area. So again, this is a sheet. It's a little hard to see with the lights on, but you can see there are, this is a sandy, shallow area, particularly the 75 acres. There are some sandbars that don't show up quite as well in this photo. Kind of on the edge of this lease, this does have some deeper areas in it, but as you can see, it's open to the bay in both locations. I took the oyster ground leases off and blew this up a little so you can see again kind of the dynamic nature of the mouth of the creek. And you heard this at the previous Bluff Point application of the issues of trying to navigate out this creek, and there is no real channel. It kind of moves around. So cages in any of these areas do present some issues related to navigation. You can turn the lights back on. This is just to give you an idea of the fetch. Here's the applications right here. And as you can see, you've got pretty unlimited fetch to the southeast and to the east. So this is a pretty exposed area. Now, as we did with the Bluff Point application, we did survey these because we don't want to come back to the commission twice. We didn't bring it to you before we surveyed it, and you approve something, and then we stake it, and it gets protested by someone who didn't know about it the first time. So this would be the configuration of the 75-acre lease. It just kind of fills in that area that was the same area of Bluff Point. It actually came out to exactly 75 because we removed exactly 75 acres from the Bluff Point application. And I have, the way the code reads, the chief engineer has to approve the plat and has to wait 30 days before it can be assigned. That has happened. I have technically approved the plat as a leasable area, so the 30-day clock will be up, so the commission action today, we could assign a lease soon thereafter once all the bills are paid, if you determine you want a lease. Again, this is the survey of the southern parcel. We did survey that as well, and we didn't quite get the 100 acres exactly. It's 100.18. That's pretty good considering the size of it that the crew went out and did. So in summary and recommendation, any leases in the area of Barnes Creek remain controversial with local residents for numerous reasons, as I've previously stated. In addition to the concerns of the protestants, staff also has concerns about the suitability of these areas for on-bottom aquaculture and traditional methods due to the extreme fetch and potential wave and wind actions, which could result in movement of the cages, damage to the structures, and possible standing over of any on-bottom seed or shell planting. Additionally, as I noted earlier, the full commission considered an application in this area specifically for the 75-acre and adjacent to the 100-acre application, and deemed one portion of it not to be leased. Accordingly, after evaluating both lease applications, the concerns of the protestants, and after considering all the factors of 28.2603 through 28.2608 of the Code of Virginia, we recommend denial of application 2012-119, the southern portion for 100.18 acres, in its entirety. We also have concerns about the 75-acre parcel, 2012-118, in light of previous commission action to lease this area by a previous applicant. Additionally, granting of a lease in this area may not provide all the authorizations required should the area be used for placement of apparatus not contemplated by our on-bottom aquaculture regulation, and could require submittal of a joint permit application for such activity. However, should the commission deem this area may be suitable for some type of experimental spat production catching area, we would suggest leasing a much smaller area for such an endeavor. And I'm going to leave this one up. This shows you the depths. So the outer lease does have some, you know, relatively deeper areas compared to everything else around here, but there's a little deeper pocket right here. But I would suggest that this chart is subject to change on pretty much a daily basis, because this is a pretty dynamic area, and there is a lot of shoaling, particularly from here in, and it's variable in this location. The applicant is here. A number of the protestants are here, and I'd be happy to attempt to answer any questions.
Questions of Mr. Stang? Okay. Mr. Smith?
appreciate Mr. Sags' presentation. I'd forgotten while I was here. It's been so long today.
It has been a long day.
Ms.
Green, you solemnly swear the testimony you give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so...
Yes, sir.
Thank you. State your name for the record.
Ken Smith. I really don't know what to say other than I've applied for two pieces of Oyster Shore, and I feel as though, you know, I have a right to apply for those. Mr. Sags showed one slide a minute ago about and showed a piece of prop of a lease in front of Bluff Point right
over. Go back to
that. Excuse me. Now, the commission approved that, and that certainly has just as much fetch as the two pieces I'm talking about.
Which one?
This one right here.
Okay.
And if I've got something right here, too, Mr. Commissioner, I don't know how to show this, but it will show that piece of body.
If you show it to us, we're going to have to keep it for 30 days.
That's okay. You can have it.
Okay. Rob can help you hold it up there so we can see it. Put Rob to work.
Here's that piece I'm talking about that the commission did approve to have just as much fetch. And here's a piece right here that's owned by Mr. Riley Gaskins. Certainly has just as much fetch as a productive oyster farm. So, I mean, it is, you know, a chance.
Okay.
What's that? I've got a few pictures on this that somebody can put that in.
Hey, we're really putting Rob to work today.
Yeah, well, I'm warning him. I could have done that. You just show me where it is.
Yeah, well, that's the other question.
He's only just begun.
But I was talking about in the letter email to Mr. Stagg how I've noticed how oysters are striking. And they look to me like they either, you see this tremendous amount of strike, either in close to shore, in shallow water, you see them on the surface of all things. And I wish I could do it every time I see strike. I see it down in Matthews and Gloucester County on grass, but I've never taken a picture of it. But here's some. I think this was taken at Kellum's Oyster House on Pilings. That was up in Divide Creek, right next to Bonds Creek, where it struck on a tree. I'm not talking about putting trees out in the middle of a piece of ground to see if it'll strike. But that'll show you some more. Here's along a bulkhead. It's all up on the top surface. More piling. Rubber tires in close to shore. I'm not saying that we go put tires on the shoreline either. To be
where are those tires, Ken?
They're in Taylor's Creek.
Taylor's Creek?
Yeah. But you can see the strike. There's a place, and I've been looking for this picture for 5 days to bring here, and I can't find it. But there's a place in South Carolina where they've taken shells and put them in the water and brought them right up to the surface, and then taken rebar and put it across the shells and taken inner tubes, cut slots in them and put them all on the rebar. Those pieces of inner tube have just, I mean, they're clusters. They're just like that. They've struck so thick and heavy. Now, I know you're not going to let me put inner tubes on the bottom either, but I tend to think outside the box a little bit. And I'm thinking that, you know, there are ways that we can come up with spat to go on the bottom that are different. I know everybody's going to laugh at this, but say you took an inner tube, but instead of it being round, say it was a quarter of a mile long, manufactured and closed off on each end. If you could float that tube and get that type of strike, and why they like that, but before they all killed each other, that you took blue air in that inner tube and you popped them all off on a piece of ground. And just,
all right, you're out of the box.
You know, what's that?
You're out of the box on this one.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm just talking about things that I think that are different than what we could do. They're more. That's a piece of riprap picked up along the shore in the spot. In close to shore is another one. That's a typical shell of how some of these oysters will catch on them. And the thing is that even though there are a lot of oysters on this piece of shell, by the time they grow, they're going to grow together like this. And they're going to kill each other. I mean, you might get one or two good oysters out of it, but because of the way they grow, they're going to crush each other. When most people look at this, they see a top four coffee cup. I look at this, I see an oyster shell. If anybody who's ever worked on an oyster bar, and Miss Haney and Joe might know this because of their crab pots, the first places you see things strike are along your coal ring and on your handle.
Irons.
I look at shells today as being a commodity, and that with plastic injection and things like that, that we ought to be able to do things that will bring in something different today, that we can find a substrate that will catch oysters. I mean, I'm convinced something like this would catch them. I look at what Kirkhaven has done with the panel that to go in the crab pot, how that's biodegradable. It looks like we could come up with something like that might have substance in it and inject them, you know, that would sink to the bottom and catch strike. Like I say, I think about this stuff all the time. I used to fish trap in oyster, crabbed a little bit. When the oyster died in the 80s, fish stopped coming up the Potomac River. And I'm convinced if we ever get oysters to come back in the bay, we're going to solve a lot of the problems with it. One reason, and really the only reason I applied for this piece of bottom is because of JMU. And I've been talking with JMU. We haven't totally talked about all of my out-of-the-box thinking, but I have talked with them. And can I have one of them? I didn't get one from myself. But they're willing to experiment different types of ways for shoreline protection and spat. I don't know if you all read the email to Mr. Stagg. We've recently started developing an entity completely different from the Watermen's Association called the Virginia Watermen's Foundation. JMU would like to work with us in that. My intentions are to make this piece of bottom available to that foundation and to be working with JMU on both pieces. And I'm hoping that that you know we can come together with some of these ideas. I think this will employ some of Virginia's watermen to work with JMU. JMU has talked about how they want to be interested in writing reports on the historical and the cultural aspects of watermen. They've also, the Virginia Watermen's Association was instrumental in starting a ecotourism program. It's called the Chesapeake Heritage Program. We were able to get several watermen in the Northern Neck this year certified to run eco tours. JMU is very interested in working with the Watermen's Association and the foundation for this, and maybe work out of this location to help promote that. everything I'm doing, I'm telling you, it's all coming out of my pocket. I'm not getting anything out of it. I don't want to see anything dredged there. But I think that that this foundation that I'm talking about, one thing I've learned since being president of the Watermen's Association, you know I'm jumping everywhere here. If I come somewhere and I make a suggestion for the watermen, it's always considered welfare. But if a company comes up and they've got an idea that can benefit the community, it's called economic development. You know, we want the same type things. So one of the reasons for the foundation was it was a way that we could look for grants, you know, to pursue different projects. And I think JMU and this new foundation working together can establish, you know, like many grants to pursue these different interests in it. I'm not here to dredge any pathway to let, you know, traffic go in and out. Most of you know me here. You know, I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. And that's pretty much it. I mean, I've got good intentions here. I don't think it's going to harm anybody, and I think it might be a benefit, you know, to the Commonwealth and to watermen in the state. And I guess I get to answer questions and put people to ease when the objections are heard.
Yeah. Well, let's see if anybody has any questions for you at this point, and then we'll hear from the protesters. Joe, did you have a question? No. All right. Sure. Mr. Robbins.
Thanks, Chairman. Can you hear staff's recommendation? And at the end of it, there was some talk about perhaps considering a smaller area. At least part of this came before us before when we had the hearing for Bluff Point.
I just know it was denied.
Right.
That's all I know.
But I'm just looking at the area and part of the concerns, and we'll hear more from the protestants in a minute, but part of the concerns related to the use of the area and navigation, et cetera. But are there portions of that offshore one, for example?
The one that shows water depth.
Go to the next one. That's it.
There you go.
Yeah, that's the one you're talking about.
Right.
Right here. Right in here is a...
Ken, we're going to need you to stay by the microphone so we can hear you.
Well, up to the north...
You can use the mouse. You can use the mouse to point.
Heck, don't. Oh, okay. Yeah, I got it. Oh, there's a duck blind right in here. This duck blind, he's got oyster strike all over it. And this is the area through here. I mean, it's not navigable anyway through here. But I tell you, this is an evolving plane. I mean, with what JMU will work with me with. But I feel as though, from what I showed you in the pictures, that this area through here is going to be the better chance of getting any type of strike. This down here is certainly deep enough to hold a few cages if you want to. All of this bottom is hard. And as far as fetch, if anybody's familiar with the Potomac River, there's no more fetch than what's at Vermar Beach or at Lynch's Point. And I've been at Lynch's Point. I mean, it's the closest I've ever worked to shore in my life, and it's the best lick of oysters I've ever been on. It was a piece of slate there. That sand flowing through there all the time and held oysters. Where are my pictures here, Rob? How did I get to those again? Oh, there's just one other I want to show you here. But when I talk about things that they strike up close to the surface, does anybody notice that picture? That's your pier, Mr. Fox.
Yeah. I was about to guess that.
Yeah. I mean, all of those are oysters. It's heavy strike, too, isn't it? And look how they're out of the water. I mean, they all came right up at the top of the surface. You know, I think with that shallow water that I'm talking about that was used before, I think that's a good area to experiment with strike. The very lower end of the corners got water depth that will support cages. All of the 100-acre piece, except a very little bit inshore, is in 4 feet of water. The rest of it's deep enough boats can go over top of. And besides that, it might be shelled anyway. You know, these are, like I say, it's an evolving plan. It's for another purpose, but I think I'm in my bounds, you know, applying for it, and I think it should be approved.
Any questions? Any other questions? Thank you, Ken. You'll get a rebuttal after we hear from the protestants. Who wishes to speak against the... Any other comments in favor of the project? All right. Who wishes to speak in opposition? All right. Come on up. Ms. Hall, why don't you come up first?
That's where I'm in for this, right?
How about if everybody who's going to testify raises their stands up and we'll swear you all in? And you swear the testimony you will give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Ida Hall, commissioners. Been here before, back in August, and didn't plan to be here again. And quite frankly, I want to comment on a couple of comments that Ken made. Ken has some great ideas, and as a commercial waterman, Ken's done support a lot of things he's done. My concern here is the location of where he wants to put either lease more oysters or do an oyster spat collection. If I could just first comment on some of the comments that he made regarding the fact that he has a right to lease oyster ground, and certainly that is correct. He made a comment that the area along Bluff Point, I think it's that portion of the top up there, goes along Bluff Point, and that is a very shallow, very strong fetch area, but it is not in the immediate vicinity of where people do navigate in and out of Barnes Creek. It's to a shore where no one lives, and it's an uninhabited area. So I think that's important. Excuse me. I think that's important to keep that in mind, that just because it is exposed to the fetch, it's not the same as having oyster cages or oyster leases directly located in the path of navigation. And he also mentioned Ryland Gaskin Shore, which is farther down the shore out in much deeper water. It's away from any of this type of shallow, sandy, hard bottom that's constantly shifting. And it is and has been a protective oyster ground. And certainly Ken is right that oyster shells are a commodity, and that we need to be looking at alternatives to getting material for spat to strike on. But once again, I'm concerned about his plan and the fact that he chose these two areas, the one in particular that was already denied, and then this other area that is sort of attached on to the Bluff Point Holdings, well, the southern lease. And I don't live in Barnes Creek, but I own property at the head of Barnes Creek with my brother. And I'm the fourth generation of my family to live in the area and on the family farm that also borders the Chesapeake Bay and Jarvis Creek. And I am a commercial waterman. I've worked on the water crabbing, fishing, and oystering. And it troubles me deeply that I would stand up here and speak in opposition of, you know, watermen's interests and desires, because I've always been very supportive and continue to be very supportive of watermen's needs. And I've stood before you a couple of times speaking out, asking support for pound net fishermen to get pound net leases, pound nets, and the area. So it's very hard, but I don't support either of these lease requests for a number of the reasons that Mr. Stagg cited, because it is a very dynamic area. But it also concerns me that is this really about oystering to benefit watermen, or could this ultimately enable Bluff Point Holdings to get back the lease that they were denied? Because in an email in August the 22nd of 2012, Ken Smith states that he has been talking to Bluff Point Holdings for approximately 2 years now on ways Bluff Point Holdings can partner with Virginia Watermen. And it was less than 3 weeks after Bluff Point Holdings' lease was reduced that he immediately requested that 75 acres and an additional 100 acres. Another concern that I have is that if this is truly for the benefit of the watermen, the Virginia Watermen's Association and most of the watermen have no knowledge of these plans that Ken wanted to lease these areas, and no knowledge of his plans to experiment with catching spat. I've had the privilege and opportunity not only to work on the water alongside far more knowledgeable watermen, but the past 4 years I've been privileged to serve as secretary of the Virginia Watermen's Association, and I take my job very seriously. But during those 4 years, Ken has never mentioned these leases at any of the meetings. The Virginia Watermen's Association did agree to fund becoming a 501c3 corporation to accept grant money, but this was prompted primarily for grants that the new CRAB panel is applying for to develop an electronic harvest reporting system. Over the years, we have heard from other watermen like Bob Jensen and Dudley Biddlecombe, who've spoken to the Watermen's Association regarding different materials or methods for catching spat. And I've also heard Dudley Biddlecombe speak before the Reedville Fisherman's Museum, and I'm envious of the way he catches the natural spat in cages and all the documentation that he has done to determine the best and most opportune time to put these shells in these clean shells in these cages to collect the spat. He has done a very scientific way of going about this, and this is up in the Great Wicomico River. I had asked a couple of the watermen who live and work in the Barnes Creek area if they were going to work Ken's leases, but none of them had heard anything about him until one was looking for available areas to lease, and they happened to see that Ken was leasing areas. So I don't understand if, you know, this is something that we want to involve the watermen with, why has this been such a well-kept secret? And why is this the area to test spat collection? In Ken's email on May the 19th, he states that watermen up and down the bay can testify to the amount of spat that is attaching to their crab pot irons. And if spat are being caught throughout the bay, then why concentrate such a huge lease request in such a localized area? Why not request several lease areas throughout the bay to benefit more watermen and determine the best areas for spat collection? None of the area outside of Barnes Creek has any history of oyster cultivation, because it was land as recently as 40 years ago. And I have a copy of a portion of a nautical chart that was printed in 1972, plus a couple of pictures of the area that I will pass around to you in just a minute, if that's okay. And my other question is, why are we involving James Madison University? And don't get me wrong, I had a nephew that graduated from there, and it's a great institution. But it seems to me, you know, I don't understand Ken's connection to JMU, And what stands out is the comments that Bluff Point Holdings' Tom Dingledean spoke of his connection with JMU in August of 2012. Why would independent, self-reliant watermen want to be involved with the college anyway? And if you're going to involve schools, why not involve local schools and facilities with knowledge of oystering, like them, or even the community college, or high school students, or middle school students? And what kind of low-profile oyster cages is Ken talking about? And how will these different spat collecting materials be put into these cages? Are we chopping up tire pieces, pieces of concrete? It seems like there needs to be a lot more information before any decision is made. And is this a suitable location for cage aquaculture for growing oysters or catching spat? Well, I have some experience with oyster aquaculture. As part of the crab disaster relief program, I chose to do oyster aquaculture using cages in Jarvis Creek. Jarvis Creek has had a history of oystering for many years. The oysters grew extremely well, but the portion of the creek where they were growing is condemned to shellfish harvest. I do not live on Jarvis Creek, but I live directly on the Chesapeake Bay, just north of Bluff Point. Against Dr. Jim Wesson's wise advice, I got the not-so-bright idea to move a couple of the low, smaller, shallower cages onto the bay shore back of my house in shallow water, not too unlike the area outside of Barnes Creek. However, it is a bit more protected, and I show this in a map here of the area is up in this area where I live, and then you've got Barnes Creek down here. It's a little bit more protected up there. I moved a couple of the cages with about 4 to 6 bushels of oysters, close to 3 inches in length, onto the bay shore. I tied the cages to a tree on the shore. And even in Jarvis Creek, which is protected, I have tied all of the cages, large and small, to trees on shore during predicted storm events. About a week after I moved these two oyster cages, there was a freak, unpredicted storm during the night with wind gusts that picked up the cages, tossed them about and dump the oysters in the bay and the cages onto the shore. I can see this happening very easily in the area where these two leases, certainly the 75-acre portion one, but even part of the other one, because the tide as low as it was this past weekend, you wouldn't have had 7 to 9 feet of water depth. You might have had 3 or 4. And the bulk of the area is very shallow. And even though Ken says it isn't navigable, it is the primary navigational route of both commercial and recreational boaters in shallow draft boats. That's their means of getting into and out of Barnes Creek. There is a man-made channel that goes under a fixed bridge, but that is generally inside off of Henry's Creek, but that is generally not where people who have been out in the bay that want to get home quickly are going to go all the way back into Indian Creek and come back around. If you allow more huge oyster leases in this area that is already difficult to navigate, there's potential to block off ingress and egress to and from Barnes Creek. Many boaters use GPS, especially during fog, to get in and out of the creek. Locating additional oyster leases in this area further impedes navigation and imposes serious safety issues. It is a disaster waiting to happen. And how Ken approving an additional massive oyster lease in this already heavily leased area be consistent with the Code of Virginia that outlines criteria the VMRC must follow in managing the fisheries resources for all of the citizens of the Commonwealth. The code states that the VMRC shall not discriminate among user groups, and no person shall acquire an excessive share of such privileges. Ken has already stated that he is working with Bluff Point Holdings, LLC. They already have 150 acres plus 62 acres that they bought. Could these 175-acre leases be transferred to Bluff Point Holdings? Allowing another massive oyster lease in this area not only excludes recreational uses, but it also excludes other commercial uses of the area, such as crab potting, peeler potting, eel potting, and gill netting, making the area exclusive to commercial oyster production. How is this fair to other user groups? Watermen have been trying to improve their public image. How does restricting an area to a single use that is not supported by the community improve the watermen's image and unite watermen? I remember when watermen were appreciated and respected by the community for the work they did. It wasn't simply because they made good money, but primarily because they respected the water where they worked, and they respected the others who had the right to use the water as well. Approving any part or all of Ken's requested leases will not improve but only worsen the waterman's image and further diminish the community support that is vital in preserving the waterman's important culture and traditions. And talking about the waterman's culture, without Ken's help, this ecotourism would not have happened, and I was one of the participants. So I, like I said, I don't enjoy speaking out against someone who is working to do good for the watermen. But I feel that because I lived in this area on land that was my family's for four generations, I work in these waters, I am more familiar with the problems that these oyster leases will create. I would urge the commission to deny both of these oyster lease requests because they would not benefit watermen. They discriminate against other uses of the area. They create navigational and safety hazards, locating such a huge operation in such a dynamic area. It's just simply the wrong location for any type of large oyster operation, whether it be traditional or cages or a spat collection. I would offer to Ken and the Virginia Watermen's Association that if he's truly sincere about developing an area for testing spat collection, I'm more than willing to offer any part of my leased area in Jarvis Creek to watermen to do spat collection testing. Quite frankly, it's something that I've been thinking about for the area that remains condemned most of the time for shellfish harvest. There are spat attaching to tires that are there. I don't know where they came from. You know, pilings, rip wraps, and even glass.
Can you wrap up?
I'm done.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I would just.
You want to make use of that?
He wants,
all right.
He wants to
okay.
Send him out. Sorry.
That's fine.
Why did we turn down it last time? Can you remember? Navigation.
Mr. Travis, members of the Virginia Marine Resource Commission. My name is Pete Kanikas, and I live on Barnes Creek. I'm here today to urge you to deny the two oyster leases applications that Ms. Ken Smith has applied for at the mouth of Barnes Creek. There are several reasons why I'm doing this. A little history, which has already been covered, is in order to understand what is happening here. Last August, Bluff Points LLC's application to lease 250 acres inside and just outside of Orange Creek was reviewed by this commission. At that time, the commission felt that the request was too large and worked with Bluff Point LLC and reduced the request to 150 acres. Looking at the plan that shows what Bluff Point asked for and what was given last August and what Mrs. Smith is requesting, it appears that Mrs. Smith's application is an end run to get back what the commission and Bluff Point negotiated away last year. Mr. Smith's application was dated September 17th of 2012. During the same session, the commissioners requested that a 50-foot wide area be delineated across the mouth of Barnes Creek so that there would be no on-bottom aquaculture structures set into this zone. And the area he's talking about, what they did was they put, goes right across here from this point to this point. At first, I thought that this zone was to be used as a channel to get in and out of Barnes Creek, but it isn't. This zone runs at right angles to the apparent channel to get out of Barnes Creek and serves no useful purpose to those of us who are trying to go in and out of the creek. And looking at the plan, it is plain to see that all of Barnes Creek is leased out. You know, you go all the way up the whole creek. There's nothing there. It's all leased out. Some to Bluff Point and a couple other smaller leases in that area. And you'll notice that beyond the mouth of the creek where additional oyster leases acreage cover is requested, there is no provision to provide any decent means of navigating in and out of the creek. If you look to the west side of Barnes Creek, down in here, okay, there's no leases required or requested. But you notice that there's significant shoaling there as well as across the mouth. And this photograph here shows what's happening there. Not a good way to get home if you don't want to polish your prop to avoid all the potential oyster cages on to the east side of that. It is rough now. One has to be careful navigating when transiting the mouth of Barnes Creek, and granting up the additional acreage with potential of oyster cages just makes the problem worse. When you look at the navigational charts, it shows what a depth of 1 or 2 feet inside and outside of Barnes Creek where the leases are being requested. They did allude to that there is an alternate means of getting out, and that's up in here, and there's a bridge, but there's a height restriction on that bridge. It's like an 8 foot at high tide. So at high tide, you can't get out that way. You got a bigger boat. So you're rocking a hard place. I got shallow water there. I got a bridge there. I got all kinds of stuff in my way here. Doesn't look good. In reviewing the guiding principles that the commission uses, the principles state, and I quote, conservation and management measures shall not discriminate among user groups, unquote. It appears that those of us, some 21 residents living on Barnes Creek, who are recreational users of Barnes Creek, are being discriminated against. With the additional acreage being requested, it appears that there's only one user group allowed to use Barnes Creek and its approaches. If Mrs. Smith is granted these leases, and he carries out populating the areas with oyster cages, then what will happen when the next storm hits the area? The area that he's requesting is subject to fetching extending some 23 miles. Bluff Point over the years has suffered erosion from the various storms that have occurred. There's a sandy beach right here. Last summer, there's an osprey nest pole that was sitting in the water. After Sandy came through, it was about 30 feet off the beach on the inland side of the beach. After Sandy came through, and that was 12 hours, something like that, that pole is now in the middle of this sandbar. There's a little creek here that used to be completely enclosed. Now it's all open. So this whole area is subject to a lot of erosion, a major storm comes through there, things change dramatically in that area. And putting stuff here just going to make the problem worse for us. And if Mr. Smith places oyster cages on these two requested leases, I'm sure that the next storm will dislodge them and drive them into Barnes Creek. How soon will he be required to straighten things out? Why all the sudden interest in raising oysters in Barnes Creek? There are several watermen working in the area, and over the years, they have done nothing to propagate oysters in Barnes Creek. Is Barnes Creek not suitable for oysters? Are there no other areas more suitable for oysters? Again, I urge the commission to deny Mr. Smith's applications, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Yes.
Thank you.
No, I think we still have at least one other. A couple others. State your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner, Associate Commissioners. My name is Donald Rice. My wife, Karen, and I reside in Grafton, Virginia. 30-some years ago, I married a young lady named Karen Gruhl, and she's been my wife ever since. And at that time, her parents, Carl and Donna Gruhl, welcomed us into her family. And they, shortly after that, established a new home on Barnes Creek. And so ever since that time, it has been a very frequent place for us to recreate with our family. We do that in many different ways. It's a very shallow area. There's a few things on the bottom to bump into already with derelict crab pots and so forth. But we've been out there paddling and swimming, motoring around in a small John boat with a 5-horsepower motor on the back, bumping on the bottom all the way out. My father-in-law has a 26-foot sailboat with a swing keel. And with some careful planning and careful navigating, you can get across the shoal at mouth of Barnes Creek and out into some of these near-shore environments that we're talking about here. But it is very shallow. The point I like to make is that any sort of use of structures on the bottom of that thing, going beyond the crab pots that are already there, is going to be a conflict with any of these recreational activities that my family's enjoyed. My two sons are now grown. Someday they'll have children of their own. I expect they'll be coming to be visitors there and recreate there as well. However, some of the actions being taken here today and last August might very well keep that from ever happening. They'll be able to visit the area, but they won't be able to enjoy the waterborne recreation as we've done in the past. The mouth of Barnes Creek, just outside there, has been said is a very high-energy environment. I have no doubt that the oyster will strike on the bottom there. That's not the issue. Boats will strike the stuff out there. And the stuff that will be placed out there to create these cages for growing oysters won't stay where they are. We have enough problem with derelict crab pots all over the bay already. We have remains of rundown, abandoned old oyster houses and piers, docks, wharfs, everything everywhere that we have to look out for. Allowing someone to put down hundreds of acres of experimental oyster grounds using crab cages, low impact, low profile or not, they're still not low impact. It's going to contribute to that problem and make it even worse. I think it's clear to everybody that what's being proposed to you today is part and parcel of Mr. Dingledine's Bluff Point enterprise. And just to make that evident, I'll point to his master plan, which has been published in any number of places, including on the Internet, and I'll be happy to share this with you. It features something called Harbor Village on Bluff Point, and I should point out to you that what you see there is Bluff Point has a white ring beach on it.
Can you use the pointer there, the mouse?
Certainly.
There we go.
There is a cut channel through here. It was mentioned earlier. I'll just point that out. It goes under a bridge and over to Henry's Creek, and that's a deep water access to getting into Barnes Creek. I can't get through there with a sailboat. It has maybe this much clearance. So we go out this way. This is all marsh. Once that berm, that dune of about 3 or 4 feet along the bayward side of Bluff Point erodes away, the whole thing will go. This area down in here that's part of this lease, if I'm not mistaken, that was there 10, 15 years ago as dry land. It's now over here on this side of the creek. I saw that migrate over there in a span of about 4 to 5 years' time. It's a highly active environment. And anything that's placed out here, it's going to get knocked around. If you don't do anything to make sure that people are responsible for retrieving their lost gear or removing their lost gear once they abandon their business, or if the business fades, it's still going to be out there. If they're running a successful business, that's great. They're going to keep it up. If the business starts to decline, they're not going to have the money or the wherewithal to go out there and clean it up after themselves, unless you gentlemen do something to provide some accountability to require that they post insurance performance bonds and become legally obligated to go out there and remove their mess once they're done with it. One other point I'd like to make, and I think as time goes by, you'll see that this is just one of many permit decisions being made related to the Bluff Point process. There have been a lot of local decisions that have been made in Northumberland County already. You've already made one with Mrs. Engeldine's oyster lease. You're about to make one today. There will be others. In order to create this master plan, there is a harbor to be mined out of the uplands in this vicinity, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in this vicinity. Mine a pit, cut a hole through the shoreline, which will require a permit from PMRC and DEQ and the Corps of Engineers and everyone else, and then maintain a channel out there so that everyone can use that harbor. It's a large harbor, and it features as a signature feature on Barnes Creek at the Inland Marina's entrance channel. A work in Waterman's Landing is proposed along with an oyster house where people can see watermen leave for work and bring in the day's catch. Hoorah. Honoring the history of Northumberland County, the oyster house would be a signature feature of Bluff Point. So you see, this is all tied together. And once this gets to the point of a JPA, Trump permit application has not even been filed yet. It'll be coming back again. And if the Corps of Engineers is doing their job, they'll quickly realize that they need to look at the direct impacts, secondary impacts, and indirect impacts such as this in deciding whether or not that would be a permittable project under federal law. And it'd be just one more step to realize that there's a significant impact on the human environment that will trigger an environmental impact statement that will bring in Fish and Wildlife Service and EPA.
We'll take care of that when it gets before us.
Around. So please be careful when you make your decision today to bear in mind that it will have effect on other decisions you'll be making in the future. I urge you to deny the project or this permit. Failing that, I urge you to at least make sure that there is accountability built into it with performance bonds and legal obligations for the lessor to remove his gear when he's done and whenever it's disrupted by storms.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to speak? All right. Back to you, Mr. Smith.
Can your master plan be blown up on you?
It can.
First off, I want to state I do not work for Bluff Point Holdings. I mean, that's, if anybody's getting that kind of idea, I don't. The way I first got involved with Bluff Point Holdings.
She's coming, Ben.
I don't know where's the. This is the area I want to focus in on, right here.
I think that's as big as it's going to get, Ken. And you can
well,
use
that
your
area that I kind of
you circled. Can use your finger.
Well, here it is. It says right here. I mean, it's all blurred, but it says oyster house. At a waterman's meeting one night, somebody talked about how Bluff Point was doing this and asked if I'd go down there and speak. Bluff Point got talking about the oyster house. I stood up and spoke. And pretty much talked about how I was tired of people using Waterman to achieve goals of those. And what was that going to do for Waterman? The next day, one of the Board of Supervisors contacted me. This was at a Board of Supervisors meeting. And said, Ken, I wish you'd go down there and talk to the people. It might be a little bit different than what you think it is. I went down there. And the oyster house is really kind of a, I think that's just the name they're calling it, but they had plans for Waterman to maybe be doing things like shedding crabs, and they are showing things with the culture. And that's how I first got involved with Bluff Point. And so over the years, Bluff Point has asked me about things, and I've always done it to, well, what's going to be in it for the watermen? Is there something there for the watermen? So I have been working in that aspect with them. As far as me not coming here to the watermen's meeting and telling them I was leasing a piece of shore, it was advertised in the paper, and I didn't go to the watermen for the 4 years I've been working on the ecotourism meeting with the Secretary of Natural Resources, trying to get it for the state. I didn't tell them about the times I sat in on planning commissions and argued this, went to different civic groups and argued this. So there's a lot I do as president of the Watermen's Association that I don't bring into the meeting. I try to get something done, and if it comes about, then I bring it to the meeting. Oh, I guess I can cut that off and go back to this for a minute. But I just want to get those two things clear. I do not work for Bluff Point, and I have talked about it. Oh, and I'd like to get that back down to where I can see my pictures again, and also the chart coming into the
see if you can't wrap this up in just a few minutes.
That's okay. That's okay right there. We'll start. We'll hit it all sometime anyway. Oh, you know, this stuff about coming in the fog and one thing and another. Who's going to come in the fog in 3 foot of water when you got 9 feet of water right there and 9 feet of water right here? I mean, it looks to me like that's the way to come into the creek. Oh, as far as being taken up by all of one user group, this tremendous amount of shore, Lakey Coward and Ronnie Bevin's got a whole lot of shore in the Yotomac and the Cone Rivers. I mean, is that just that user group? Talked about crab pots being in there. So apparently crabbers are in there. It's just not for oyster people. Oh, one other thing. I want to get to my pictures now. If you can do that.
That's right.
Oh, go through these. Talking about the abandoned cages that might be out there if something goes wrong, and how the abandoned crab pots. Ty Farrington called me one day at Daniel Picosa, and Ty texted me this picture and said, I just caught this ghost pot out here. You can still see shells in there. The sides broke out. But that's what he had in the pot. You know, right there, I mean, here striking. Oh, there's another ghost pot full of them. There's another one. And we're back to Mr. Fox again. Oh.
No.
You know, I can tell you right now, this piece of ground is not going to be leased or turned over to Bluff Point. Why would I all of a sudden work with JMU? Because JMU is there. I mean, if it was Christopher Newport, I'd be with Christopher Newport. If it was Old Dominion, I'd be with Old Dominion. If it was Vims, I'd be with Vims. I mean, this is an opportunity to bring JMU and this new foundation together to develop ways that...
I don't think you have the need to defend yourself and your actions.
Thank you. Thank you. That's it. I hope you do, Grant. My intentions are good. It's like I said before. I say what I mean, and I mean what I say.
Sure.
It's not going to be leased.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I think that was the last comment. Matter is before the commission.
Make a motion.
Mr. Palmer.
I've known Ken for a long time, and Ken's always been very honest, very forthright about things, and very passionate about life on the water and the watermen. He wants to try something a little bit different. It's his money he's putting up, nobody else's. With that in mind, I'd like to grant him the permit on both leases.
For both leases. Motion is to approve both leases, 118 and 119. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Tankard.
No.
Was it Mr. Sessoms? I'm sorry. Comments on the motion?
I'm troubled that we turned these parts of the bay down only last August, and here we are looking at them again. And my memory is that we were concerned about navigational issues, and we were concerned about the fetch, and therefore how the any structure put on the bottom would be tossed around. And so I think the quantity of acres here is too large, larger than Mr. Smith needs to accomplish his experimental purposes. So I'm not inclined to give him all of both requests. I would listen to some smaller request if somebody wanted to propose it.
Any other comments? Mr. Tanker.
I'd concur with Mr. Fox. I mean, like I say, last August, I don't think anything's changed between now and then. Since we've heard from commercial watermen, we've heard from recreational folks about the issues of the Barnes Creek in there in the bay. Seems to me it's the same testimony we heard in August from the same kind of people. So I don't think things have changed. And I think the other thing we heard about was that, again, this idea of experimentation. You know, the folks before didn't have any experience in aquaculture, and Mr. Smith's given us no testimony to his experience with aquaculture. So I think it's too big an area for a grand experiment that might have some negative implications for the people who live in that area and use that area.
Other comments? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we heard this before, we had a lot of discussion about the navigational uses of that area in and out of Barnes Creek. And I think what you've seen up there today reflected that input and dialogue that we had with the public and the residents of that area in response to the first proposed lease. And that's what resulted in that strip up the middle of the existing lease. And now that, you know, part of that is being requested to be leased, that part over there to the right of that stem. And, you know, I think if we lease that, would sort of be invalidating the work we had done the last time around. But, you know, if there are any suggestions for a smaller portion of that offshore piece to do some experimental work in, I mean, that could be a different story. I think the discussion, though, that we had last time around considered all that testimony about the conflicts there. And we sought to mitigate that with what we did. So that strip up the middle, as I recall, reflected that discussion. Is that, Ben, is that a fair characterization of what we did last time?
I would say that's correct.
I will agree with Mr. Palmer that Mr. Smith is a well-intentioned person, and I believe he sincerely wants to experiment with different ways to trap spat, and so I'm inclined to give him some ground, but I need some help. I don't want to give him 175 acres, and I would need some help in choosing which ground.
Any other comments? It seems that the upper of the two was the area we declined back in August, and that would be hard to justify at this point, given all the comments we've heard. But
this area was part of the Bluff One application.
Yeah. The offshore area. Ken, could you want to give any further testimony? If you could only have part of that lower area, what part you would prefer? Can you come? We need you to come up.
I look at all of the 100 acres there as being good bottom and to be productive bottom. I mean, there's a chance of all of it being worked. Oh, you're talking about 9, 10, 11 feet of water. That's certainly enough water where you can pass over it. And then you get back on this other, you know, you got eight feet there. Oh, I really like that inshore piece as well because of what I'm talking about with that set. And I don't think that a boat is going to come flying across there with an outboard motor and go in any 3 feet of water where we're talking about half things.
You don't have to answer this question, but what's the minimal amount of acreage you need to do your experiments?
Oh, you know, that I don't know. I mean, that's something I don't know. Like I say, this is an evolving plan. And it's something that I would hope that in the years that could block off different sections and try different sections on section at 1, 2, 3, you know, maybe 10 acre sections, you know, to do experiments. But, I mean, this is not being done to put money in Ken's pocket. I mean, this is for a research and educational purpose that I'm applying for this grant.
Thank you. Any further comments on the motion? You ready to vote? The motion is to approve both areas. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no.
Oh. No.
Motion fails.
How many was
that? That was there's 5-2. Is there an alternate motion? Mr. Robbins.
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at the offshore piece, and you know a lot of the concerns that we heard last time, and some that have been documented here related to navigation. And it seems if we had cages on top of a 5-foot bar, those might come into play. But it looks like that right portion of the offshore piece is in deeper water, or a sliver on the left side, either one. But I would suggest if we allowed it to occupy the right 40% of that box, that it would be deep enough that it wouldn't be in play from a navigational standpoint.
And that's the 100-acre
parcel. Something like that.
Something like that.
So 40% would be about 40 acres.
Well, what we're drawing is less than 40%.
We can make it whatever you want. You could do an angled line like that. You might be able to get 40 doing that.
So if you ask it to be 9-foot elevation or whatever, depth, and whatever you could get at that depth within that 100-acre area, roughly?
Well,
Is that how you would do it, or...?
I think Mr. Ronald was suggesting about 40 acres.
Ben, what are your thoughts on the navigational aspect of it? If we're off that bar, if we're to the right of that bar,
well,
in your opinion, does that mitigate the navigational problem?
I don't know what you rely on this chart as to how accurate these depths are. But I will say that if a boat's coming in, they're either going to come in through here or they're going to come in through, if they're following the deep water. Or they're going to come up this channel and try to cut across, which is probably not going to happen because it's real shallow over here. So I realize it's deeper, but deeper means that's probably the channel. Now, is it deep enough? You put cages on it, you still navigate over it. Sailboat with a keel at low tide.
Well, if you believe the numbers, those are mean low water numbers, right?
Yeah. And this chart was made.
So do you think from a navigational standpoint you're better off on the other side?
You have a suggestion, Ken?
Hard to tell, really.
What, maybe you could take Mrs. Hall's offer up.
She can donate her estate. A sailboat with a keel, I mean, if you can't get over 9 feet, what's he going into Barnes Creek for anyway? I mean, we're talking about, I mean, Mr. Stagg just sat here and said that, and I'm back to, I mean, you've already voted me down on both pieces, so it's no sense in arguing.
Mr. Stagg
just said that, you know, a boat's going to come in through the deeper water, which goes back to my argument about this being not navigable. You know, you got this water here and you got this water over here. And, you know, I'm really kind of disappointed right now. I'd like to see all of this 100, but...
Thanks, Ken.
You know, if I have to settle for something, I'll settle for something.
Okay.
This is important to me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure of the commission. Mr. Fox.
I move we back off 40 acres from starting on the right, coming over in the direction of that bar, but not exceeding, not going on to that bar.
So move a vertical line.
Right, and then when you have to.
Starting from the right until you hit 40 acres.
Right. And unless you have to go off on the diagonal because you can't get 40 acres vertically.
Is that sufficient understanding for you? Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Seconded by Ms. Haney. Comments on the motion?
I like your precision, Mr.
Ready to vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Well, thank you.